Welcome to the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations that we call CMDA Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp, and today my guest is Mr. Jonathan Clemens, a physician assistant who has been the chair of our PA specialty section over the past year. I felt that my conversation with Jonathan was so important because it fits within the framework of a conversation that is in the spotlight of our national conversation, the hot topic of vaccinations and vaccination refusal. And if you'll keep listening after the interview, I'm going to be joined by my good friend and our Vice President for Bioethics and Public Policy, Dr. Jeff Barrows, and he's going to give us some updates on the COVID-19 vaccine development and a few critical issues that I believe we as Christians in healthcare must keep in mind as our government and many governments around the globe are working 24/7 to develop an effective vaccine for the coronavirus and hopefully dial this pandemic down to a dull roar, if not, shut it down completely. Well, I welcome to CMDA Matters today, Mr. Jonathan Clemens. He's a physician assistant practicing family occupational eating disorder and sleep medicine in Olympia, Washington, since he graduated from Pacific University in 2012. He's also teaching county EMS within the county EMS system, and he serves with his local fire department. He holds an MDiv from Pepperdine University and is working toward a Master of Theology from Western Seminary in Portland. For the 2019-2020 academic year, Jonathan served as the president or chair of the Fellowship of Christian PAs, which is not only one of our specialty sections, one of the older sections within CMDA, but also actually is a constituent organization or caucus within the American Academy of PAs, or the AAPA, which is the national professional organization for PAs. Prior to his career change into medicine, Jonathan worked in information security. He, together with his wife, Terry, have two adult sons and one daughter remaining at home. So it's indeed a privilege for me, Jonathan, to welcome you to CMDA Matters. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chupp. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, just to give our listeners a little background, back in February, March, I got almost two simultaneous emails, one from you telling me that you had written an article entitled Addressing Religious Objections to Vaccination. And within just a matter of a week, I got an email from an old friend of mine who just briefly said, "Hey, Mike, I'm running into Christians in person and on social media who have succumbed to or even promoting anti-vaccination propaganda. I know you at CMDA have spoken out decisively on this subject, and you've got excellent resources, but I just would really appreciate a program on CMDA Matters, not on the safety of vaccinations, but on our responsibility, if any, to resist this movement and what would be appropriate or effective." So immediately thought, okay, Jonathan Clemens, who is chair of PA section, has written an article in a national publication from the American Academy of Physician Assistants. It seemed like I was supposed to invite you to come join me today, Jonathan.
Well, thank you very much. Indeed, that article started almost a whole year ago with a comment by one of the AAPA executive board who said, "You know, we don't have anything about talking with patients on religious objections to vaccinations." And so I wrote that article designed for all clinicians, not just Christians like you and I, but for any primary care clinician to talk with their patients and kind of feel out what the actual objections to vaccinations were.
Well, Jonathan, let's jump into your article. Tell us why Christians sometimes object to vaccinations, both legitimate and maybe not as legitimate.
You know, you can slice and dice this a bunch of different ways, but I think there's three major headings why people, Christians, and not reject vaccines. First would be they're misinformed or fearful. People are bad at statistics. As human beings, we tend to buy lottery tickets and be afraid of jet air travel. So there's a lot of poor statistical understanding, and those folks really just need to have something put in context. The really smallest objection, I think, is principled objections, such as Christians who decline vaccines that make use of old aborted fetal tissue. That's its own issue, and that's really a principled objection. And by far the ones who are getting the most press are the third kind, and that would be the conspiracy theorists who are sure that this is just some big pharmacy intent to poison us all and make money doing it at the same time, and that you and I as Christian healthcare professionals are at best unwitting dupes in this grand conspiracy.
You come up with a very organized sort of stepwise way to interact with patients or parents for childhood immunizations. And just take us through those steps of identify, explore, educate, and then a review.
So identify is first figure out what exact vaccines are being objected to. There are dozens of different vaccines, and you don't want to be giving somebody the wrong information if that's not what their concern is. So the second bit is just explore and figure out not only what are they objecting to, but why. So is it a concern about safety? Is it a concern about consequences? Is it a concern about something else entirely? And then educate, both means educate yourself and then educate the patient. One of the things I think is appropriate for this whole detailed discussion is don't just respond off the cuff if you don't know what's going on. Go ahead and take the patient's concerns, go ahead and do a little bit of searching, and you'll readily find resources to educate yourself on the issue and then being able to speak with the patient about what you found. And then finally, review whether their objections still make sense in light of what you've actually been able to show them.
And sometimes I think you mentioned in your article that that even may require scheduling a return appointment to give you an adequate time to do the research needed to be able to answer their question, right?
Absolutely. So this is really designed for primary care medical professionals. As a specialist, often you're not going to have time, as I understand it, to bring people back to talk about this. So this is really focused on those of us who develop relationships over time with folks. And hopefully, even if patients don't actually agree with us, the entire respectful communication process builds provider-patient trust.
In your experience over the last few years of your practice, Jonathan, how often does this come up? Does it come up once a month? Does it come up once or twice a year in terms of objections to vaccinations that you're offering? And then how often is it 80-90% of the time that you can talk them through it and they change their minds? Or just talk to us a little bit about what your experience has been.
So I would say this comes up probably weekly during flu season, as people are objecting to influenza, yearly influenza vaccines. And unfortunately, this is not a very easy nut to crack. I do not pretend that my approach is going to overcome all objections or get people to take up vaccines when they haven't already. Part of this is really just integrity of the process to make sure they have an informed refusal, rather than just accepting at face value what they've read on the internet, why they shouldn't get their flu shot or whatever.
One of the maybe not infrequent objections is risk of autism. Would you just briefly address that risk and where the information stands right now?
I suspect most of your our listeners will have heard this, but Dr. Andrew Wakefield was, as the record shows us now, collaborating with a law firm to sue the makers of the MMR vaccine and try and not only collect money there, but promote an alternative product by which he would personally profit. That didn't work well in terms of the science. The numbers of children he experimented on were low. There was data falsification and no informed consent anyways. It was an entirely abysmal way to approach things. He no longer is allowed to practice medicine in the United Kingdom, and he is now making money supporting more broad anti-vaccination efforts. And unfortunately, this has probably caused more childhood morbidity and mortality than anything else one person has ever done. The anti-vax movement picked up from this, and millions of dollars in research have been spent to refute the idea that vaccines cause autism or really anything else. And sad to say, that money could have gone to actual research on new vaccines or otherwise improving safety, rather than just simply demonstrating what we knew all along, that autism becomes diagnosable during early childhood when children are getting their vaccines. Human beings are wonderful at making connections and observing things. People want there to be a causal relationship between the shots my kid got and this diagnosis. The best science shows, as clear as we can, there is no such connection. It's hard to prove a negative, but the meta-analyses are pretty conclusive. There isn't any relationship at all.
You mentioned that your recommendations in how to interact respectfully and gently with patients in your article assumes a couple of things, that there isn't a law that's been passed that mandates that patients get a particular vaccine like measles, and also that practitioners aren't firing patients or not taking new patients because of a lack of immunizations. Now, one of the earliest phone calls that I personally received, Jonathan, here at CMDA was from an irate woman a couple, 3 years ago who looked up our doctor search on her web and found a pediatrician local to her. And it turns out that she's an anti-vaxxer and the pediatrician would not take the patient because of that refusal. How common is that out there? Are you aware of whether whoever's doing primary care, pediatricians, family physicians, PAs, and so forth, how common is it that you've seen out there that people won't take patients, parents who won't who won't vaccinate their kids?
Well, I don't have a survey, but my sense is that it's a substantial minority. That is, it's not just one or two places, but that it's not the majority. And again, that's going to be an individual practice decision. If, for example, a pediatric practice had a lot of immunocompromised kids, or really even a couple, it doesn't make sense to have them sharing waiting rooms with kids who might be tracking in who knows what because they haven't had their scheduled vaccines on time. And so that's a tough decision. And my practice doesn't fail to care for, or doesn't choose not to care for, folks who are anti-vax. But again, when it can cause actual harm to other patients, it becomes really an ethical issue for the provider to decide whether he or she can continue to accommodate unreasonable, non-science-based refusal to protect especially the young kids and, by extension, the rest of that pediatric panel. It's not an easy answer.
Another issue that you address in the article you wrote about is in regards to Gardasil, Jonathan, and you give a case study, a very nice one, of an evangelical Christian woman who is objecting to her daughter, teenage daughter, getting the vaccination because of a feeling that it would promote her being more sexually active as a teen. How do our members, assuming they support the use of the HPV vaccine, how would you suggest they address that particular concern?
First of all, we tell our kids to drive safe and wear seatbelts. Even though there's an airbag, the evidence definitely is seatbelts save lives. And so I would kind of take that approach as a primary. Specifically with Christian parents who are afraid of promoting sin, the fact is sin shouldn't kill people. We want people able to repent. And if people are dead or nearly so from cervical cancer, that's a terrible consequence for sin. Our job is not to enforce the fall, but to try and ease suffering to the extent that we have a way to do that. That doesn't change God's direction. And removing one consequence of early onset premarital sexual behavior doesn't make it okay. It remains something against God's law, against God's best advice for us, if you want to look at it that way, because the Bible, all of God's purity laws are really about us, right? And so removing one consequence, it doesn't change that at all. From a more hopeful standpoint, one of the things I share with moms of teen girls is when we're talking about this at age, say, 10 to 12, that I hope in, say, 9 to 11 years when that young woman is going to turn 21. I'm hoping that by that time we will have enough evidence, because it's already building very rapidly, that Gardasil is sufficiently effective that that young woman will never have to have a screening PAP ever. I don't know that that's going to turn out, but I really hope it does. Again, I have a 14-year-old, and I really hope that she doesn't have to undergo that uncomfortable and certainly invasive procedure for no good reason. If we have, by HPV vaccination, substantially eliminated the chance that these young women are going to get this life-threatening disease.
Don't you think we're going to be at an all-time high for all kinds of discussions about vaccines coming up for COVID-19?
So that's absolutely true. In fact, there's been surveys done where as many as one-third of Americans intend to either delay or reject a COVID-19 vaccine when it comes out. Now, obviously, they don't have one to choose yet, so the actual numbers will be probably vary quite a lot from that. But still, that's problematic, because you have one-third of anyone not getting a vaccine. We won't reach herd immunity if one-third of Americans don't get their shot. And so this is a challenge. You know, I talked about those kind of three divisions of anti-vaxxers. And the challenge with an accelerated vaccine development schedule is that you have people in the fearful category rather than the conspiracy theory category, who are obviously they're against the vaccine before it's even been designed. The fearful category are going to say, well, this is going by so fast, there's so much risk from the vaccine. The challenge is that we have a very different risk assessment profile when we're deciding what vaccines go on the schedule. That is, those expected to be administered at a particular age for any given American. Vaccines need to cause no problems, or virtually no problems, because they're given to healthy people. In other words, if I cause a problem and you didn't have a problem before, that's a big oops. And we're dealing with something a little bit different with COVID-19. You know, the final numbers on case fatality and mortality aren't in, but it's substantially more deadly than any of the other childhood illnesses.
Well, I want to thank you, Jonathan, for joining us today and talking about a very important topic. And I think your approach definitely is one that I think is a very biblical one in terms of being gentle, treating patients, parents with respect, and identifying actually what their problems are, exploring with them the data and what they actually believe, providing with them facts, reviewing, and then allowing them to think about it, and maintaining a relationship as a primary care physician or PA or nurse practitioner, whatever.
Thank you for your graciousness, Mike, and thank you very much for the opportunity to talk.
Well, as I shared with you earlier, I'm joined here in the studio today by Dr. Jeff Barrows, who's been serving with us here in Bristol and directing our public policy efforts since April 1st. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Mike.
I'd like you to give us a quick summary of this thing that the administration calls Operation Warp Speed and how things are progressing with the various vaccines.
Operation Warp Speed is a collaboration of several U.S. government departments, including Health and Human Services, as well as the private sector. And their goal is to develop and distribute a safe and effective vaccine for COVID-19 by January of 2021. And so there are currently five Operation Warp Speed candidates that really are in the final running. And the first one is a messenger RNA from Moderna. A second one is a somewhat similar modified mRNA vaccine from BioNTech and Pfizer. And a third from Merck Sharp and Dohme, and then Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca pull up the end with two other vaccines.
So as you've looked over these various vaccines that are in development and racing to be the first to be ready for us here in the States and around the globe, what are any ethical concerns that you might have, Jeff, regarding these vaccines? And if so, which ones do you see as potentially problematic?
Yeah, there are two vaccines that are ethically problematic, and they are the ones from both Johnson & Johnson or their subsidiary Janssen, and the one from AstraZeneca and Oxford. Both are problematic because they use an adenovirus as a vector, and this adenovirus is produced in part with the help of fetal cells grown as a result of aborted fetuses. So these abortions were done many years ago, but it still is ethically problematic that both of these vaccines are still using fetal cells derived from abortions to develop these vaccines.
Well, as Jonathan and I were discussing, I mean, there are vaccines that many Christians have been willing to take. Christian healthcare professionals, primary care, have been willing to, Jeff, give their patients. In spite of that fact, I think the MMR, it would be in that category, that those particular vaccines were also developed. So it's not as if this is a new concept, right?
That's correct. There is are few vaccines currently that are out there, and they're the only option in that for that particular disease, and they're also produced by the same cell lines.
Is there anything that our listeners on CMDA Matters can do as these vaccine trials go into phase three studies?
Well, I would look at this as a horse race with there three that are in the lead. Two of those are ethically pure. They are not using cell lines derived from abortions, but there is one that is problematic, and that is the vaccine from AstraZeneca. What I would encourage our listeners to do is watch closely over the next several months as more data comes out regarding these vaccines to see whether or not AstraZeneca and the vaccine from Oxford comes out in the lead. And if so, we will be creating an online campaign through the work of Jonathan Imbody and Freedom to Care. And thirdly, I would just ask that everyone pray that the Lord allows the ones that are ethically pure to take the lead and be the ones that are used in the end to develop a COVID-19 vaccine.
So after looking online and studying this particular subject, Dr. Barrows, any predictions as to when we actually might have these vaccines available in the United States or around the world?
Well, again, the goal of Operation Warp Speed is to have 300 million doses of a safe and effective vaccine by January of 2021. And there's no question this is an ambitious plan. And I would say that only one out of the five candidates has actually produced a human vaccine previously, and that's the one with Merck Sharp and Dohme. And they produced a vaccine against Ebola. So the other ones are all using proven technology. So I think that while phase one studies have been hopeful in terms of safety and effectiveness, no one is giving any credible prediction as to what will happen in the future.
Well, thanks, Dr. Barrows. While I have you here in the studio, would you just make a few comments? You've been now with us for 4 months directing our bioethics and public policy efforts. Would you just comment about what you've seen in terms of the importance of the voice ministry for Christians in healthcare that we have in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, the work of Jonathan Imbody in Washington is absolutely critical. And one of the things that he does on a very regular basis is join the meeting that Ambassador Sam Brownback has regarding international religious freedom. And today, an estimated 80% of people around the world are living in countries without religious freedom. So I would ask our listeners to remember to pray for those who are advocating for freedom, and especially to pray for the millions of our brothers and sisters around the world who are suffering for their faith in countries like China and Iran, North Korea, Pakistan, India, Nigeria, Vietnam, and elsewhere. And if they want to learn more about international religious freedom initiatives, they can visit our website at freedomtocare.org/international. That's freedom, the number 2, care.org/international.
Dr. Barrows, thanks for joining me today on CMDA Matters. And I just also want to make our listeners aware that Jeff was involved in helping a task force put together some guidelines for church reopening in the setting of coronavirus. And if you'd like to read those and get access to those, just go to our website, cmda.org/coronavirus, and you'll come across those guidelines, which you can share with your pastor or your elder team at your church. Thanks, Jeff.
My pleasure, Mike.
Today, I'd like to point you to several great resources that we have here at CMDA. We strongly believe that it's important for Christians to engage with our broader culture. and Dr. John F. Kilner's book, Why the Church Needs Bioethics, A Guide to Wise Engagement with Life's Challenges. That book equips students, church and lay leaders, and people in health-related fields with the knowledge to make faithful, bioethical decisions and to help foster a world where human beings are shown respect as people created in the image of God. It can be purchased at cmda.org/store or just call 888-230-2637 and we'll get a copy in the mail to you right away. I'd also like to highlight, since Jonathan was my guest, our CMDA Fellowship of Christian Physician Assistants section. And the purpose of this specialty section is for PAs to share their faith, the strength of their relationship with Jesus Christ with each other, and their common concerns through a support network for PAs who acknowledge their relationship desire to follow Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. I certainly hope that you will check out our PA section today, as well as our many other sections on our website, or encourage a PA in your life, your practice, and in your environment to check it out as well. I mentioned a few weeks ago that we have a new Bible study this fall on the CMDA Student Life app. Dr. David Goodman's Teach Us to Pray is a study on the Lord's Prayer, and it's now available for healthcare students and graduates alike. Be sure to check that out. The CMDA Student Life app is easy to download from your favorite phone app platform. As I close, throughout this pandemic, I've been thinking a lot on some passages of Scripture that deal with the authorities that God has put in place in our lives, especially local and federal government. I've heard from our friend, Oz Guinness, that many Christians today approach Scripture as if they're at a buffet line at a restaurant, picking and choosing doctrine and instructions that match their tastes and personal preferences. Paul told Titus in his letter to Titus, chapter 3, verse 1, "Remind the believers to submit to the government and its officers. They should be obedient, always ready to do what is good." Well, this instruction is a close companion to Paul's instructions to the Romans in chapter 13 of that epistle. As CMDA members, bringing the hope and healing of Christ to the world, let's be very careful together and Spirit-led as we respond in coming days to treatments and vaccines for the COVID-19 plague, that we might bring Jesus Christ great glory. Now, I know that matters to you, and so it matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. We'll see you next week, God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.